The following program is brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, and the views expressed may not necessarily reflect the views of this station.
In today's program, we've got one of our financial advisors, Hanson McLean Financial Advisors, talking about how an individual can put $20,000 a year into a Roth IRA legally. 20 grand a year into a Roth legally. You're going to hear this.
And we also have a caller that wants to know, does her trust need updated? Well, it depends. It depends.
And also how to figure out if you plan on retiring out of the state, what are some steps to take today to get you ready for that? Stick around for that and more. Hanson McLean's Money Matters coming right up.
Wondering if you're on track with your financial matters? Call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean. Thanks for joining us.
We're glad you are here with us on this day as we talk about financial matters. Both myself and my co-host here, we're both financial advisors, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. We spend our weekdays meeting with people like yourself, helping them plan their financial future and make wise investment choices. And we come here on the weekends to be your financial advisors on the air. So whether you have advisors you're working with now, or you do things on your own, or a combination thereof, whatever the case may be, we want you to consider us your another source for financial information and your financial advisors on the air.
And we've been doing this show for almost 22
years.
2 years.
That's correct.
Yeah. So if you're new, thank you for joining us. You're a little late, but you're here.
And actually, we got a nice compliment the other day. Somebody said he's been listening to our show since its inception. You get a copy of that email? That email that someone came in the other day? By the way, if you send complimentary emails, they get forwarded to us. If they're critical... I say it. I don't want any critical.
I don't remember
unless
seeing that
unless
email.
It's a good critique. I take,
yeah. But anyway, we're here. We take calls. We answer questions. You can call us with any financial question you have whatsoever. Mortgages. Should I pay off my mortgage? Should I refinance my mortgage? Should I invest in this mutual fund? You know, my neighbor's trying to sell me this, and he calls it the best financial product in the world. Any of those types of questions.
Yep. And to join us, 1-888-2-HANSON. Again, that number is 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, it's 1-888-242-6766. Now, we just finished over the last 2 weeks, we finished a series of our fall workshops, our 7 personal decision points for retirement transition workshops. And we had hundreds of people come, which was great. But I know there are some that, for example, weren't able to make it or had to cancel that day or for whatever reason. If you'd like the similar information, our website has a good webinar. You can follow through on a webinar on our it's a pre-recorded webinar on our website. There's also some guides.
And there's a great ebook.
Yeah, that provides that as well. And you just simply go to HansonMcLean.com and the learning, I think it's the learning library.
Learning library.
Is that what it is? Learning library. Learning. Yes, I'm getting a thumbs up from the booth. Learning library, and it'll give you the information. And if you want a copy of my book, you simply go to HansonMcLean.com/book. And I think there's a code there for 75% off Amazon. And just click, click, click. And I think it's the code there.
If you've ever been to one of our workshops, you will realize how educationally centric we are, which is the
same thing as this radio program.
Yeah. The better someone understands their financial situation, the better investor they will be.
Truly.
And some people don't need our services. Some people want our services, which is great. That's what we're in business. But some people just come to the workshops to learn things, and that's fine too. There's nothing wrong with that. Just come in. I'll buy you some cookies, but that's it. We're going to cut it off right there.
You know, it's funny. I was talking to I was at a CEO conference. They call it a CEO conference, mainly because they're CEOs, I guess, in the financial services industry. Once a year, I go to this conference, and it's a bunch of the CEOs. And so I was talking to president of a large independent financial advisory firm in a different part of the country, and we were talking, and they do a lot of educational workshops as well in their area. And we're talking, and he asked, so do you guys provide like steak dinners and stuff? And I said, no, we don't. And he says, neither do we. And we were having this discussion. And the reason is, it's not that we don't appreciate our clients. As a matter of fact, we have we've had many events over the years with our clients, but we don't have these dinners like at a steakhouse. We're coming and have a free meal, and then we're going to try to sell you some product. That's just not. And there's something that, you know, there's.
We have, though. We tried it once or twice. But it just wasn't. It didn't feel right. It just didn't feel right. I felt like you were coming for the wrong reasons.
And then I don't want someone to feel obligated that they should do something as a way of saying thank you for the free meal.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we have them at a time where you can have your meal ahead of time and come
and then come in. We will buy
some appetizers.
Sugary stacks and.
Fatty, sugary.
But if you've missed those, which is okay, obviously, you can go to HansonMcLean.com and go
it's
to the
okay
Learning
that
Library.
They missed them. They don't have
to.
It's
obvious. But if you have any interest at all in improving your understanding of your financial situation,
well, you know, Pat,
there's no downside in it.
So you bring up a good point. And if you're listening to this program, you obviously care something about finance. That's why you're listening. It makes a difference when people have some level of understanding of the financial markets.
A understanding.
And of their own financial planning situation. Right?
Yes. 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 It makes a big difference.
Now, so I'm going to get. So my wife and I have been in the same house 12 years. Things are starting to kind of fall apart. So I had a handyman kind of person there last couple of weeks working on something. And he wanted to give me every little detail about what he was doing there. And I remember thinking, I really don't care how you get this done.
That's right.
I'm thinking, just get it done. It's going to last for another 12 years. I'm fine.
Just give me the overview?
Yes.
I don't care what color that wire was.
Every little
but
coupler and all
you understood
stuff.
What a wire was. And you understood that electricity.
But part of my point is, I don't really think it was that important for me having some basic level of knowledge what he was doing. Because the impact was minor.
Okay.
When you're talking about your life savings, your retirement savings, the impact is not minor.
That's correct.
The impact is life altering, or certainly could be. And when we see people buy financial products from unscrupulous advisors that if they just did a few minutes of research would see that the advisor has gotten into regulatory problems for their entire career.
You can see that. It's pretty easy. Go to brokercheck.com.
People making these just horrible decisions because they've lacked just a rudimentary knowledge of how things
basic
work. Some basic knowledge. So our point is, we believe it's important for everybody to have some basic understanding of how these financial markets work. Nobody cares about your money as much as you care about your money.
That's correct.
We hope. Years ago, remember when Beanie Babies were like in the thing?
Yeah.
All right. So there was a couple, they had retired. This is many years ago. They had the way our process worked at Hanson McLean, we did the financial plan, helped them through retirement. We had a meeting scheduled just to discuss investment strategies. And we'd set aside an hour, and we were going to take an hour together to discuss various investment options.
You were going to explain to them what you were going to do with the money.
Correct. So they had some reasonable understanding. And they came in and they said, we don't have much time because we're going to a Beanie Baby conference. I said, excuse me? They said, yeah, we've got this Beanie Baby conference. And so we have about 10 minutes is all we can stay. Convention or something, right?
Yeah.
And it's not like they had an investment size of Beanie Babies.
Right?
Right? It was like, you know.
It was a hobby.
Yeah, hobby. A hobby. Right. And I said to him, that's your prerogative. You can skip this meeting if you'd like, but I really think it's in your best interest to have some understanding of what's going on here.
Yeah.
And they left after 10 minutes. And
which is okay, but you offered it to them? Fortunately.
It's okay, but.
But Scott, it could
it's
have been,
okay because they're with me, frankly.
That's my point. But they could have been with some.
They could have been with someone who's taken advantage
some
of
some schmucks somewhere. Is that a bad word?
Schmucks not, no.
Okay. Oh, Dinner with Schmucks. I remember that. But. The point being,
what?
That was a movie.
That's how you decide if a word is okay to say. It is hard though, because there's words that used to be a bad word when I was a kid. Now,
yeah, they're okay. But my point, your point being is, go to our website. There's what we wanted you to do. Go to HansonMcLean.com. Go to the Learning Library. Spend some time on there.
And
get a basic understanding or an in-depth understanding.
Us or somewhere else. Have some rudimentary knowledge. It's just the more you're armed with some information and some knowledge,
and stay
the
away,
you're going to be.
Stay away. And I will put this out here right now.
Stay away from what?
Non-traded real estate investment trust. That's if you leave one of our workshops and you never buy a non-traded real estate investment trust or an indexed annuity, I am happy. Stay away from them. They're garbage. They're garbage.
Expensive.
That is the number one thing we see in our office where people come in and say, I would like your help. I own these. And what are they? Non-traded real estate investment trust and index annuities. And the ability for us to help them is we help them, but it is hindered greatly.
It's because their money's tied up for 10 years, 12 years, 15 years. Tied up for 15 years.
Longer than most marriages last, they have decided to enter a relationship with an insurance company.
All right. We're going to take some calls here because we said we would. 1-888-2-HANSEN to be part of the program here. We're going to talk with Tyra in Colorado. Tyra, you're with Hanson McLean.
Thank you so much for taking my call.
Hi, Tyra.
So, my situation is pretty different, I guess, in that we aren't retired yet, but plan to be retired, both of us, by 2019. And so we purchased our home here for about 5 years ago for $285,000, which is about $25,000 below my market value. Now the house is worth between $415,000 and $435,000. We own the house outright, and we know that we're going to move out of state. And we want to purchase a house, though, that's $500,000 that we love. And so we have money that's saved, but we aren't sure if we should, you know, just go ahead and get a small mortgage and pay it off, you know, slowly but surely, you know. And if
so, Tyra,
so that's kind of where we are.
Okay.
So,
and wait, by the way, we've seen this a lot.
Yeah.
So people, okay. Yeah, people move. At retirement, they've got this dream. Let's say we're going to go to this other area, this other state, find the dream house. Mm-hmm.
So you
sometimes buy it before they retire.
So you're thinking of buying this $500,000 house in the place you're going to retire, correct?
Yes. It's a community, a 55-plus community, great community, something that we really, really, really like.
How far away is it from where you're living now?
So it's the other side of the world. So it's the East Coast.
Got it. Got it.
Where in the East Coast, by the way?
So so it's Wilmington is where we're.
Oh, Delaware.
Town. Yeah.
Oh, so. I think you're the first person I've talked to who says they're moving to Delaware at retirement.
So
no, really. Good for you.
How old are you?
So that's another thing. So I'm 53 now, but by the time we retire, I'll be 55. My husband is 9 years older than me.
Okay.
And so he's 60. He'll be 60. 64.
64.
Well, yeah, because it'll be on the cusp. Yeah. So it'll be 64. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So What other assets do you have? You said that you had enough money to pay cash for this house, or you do not have enough money to pay cash?
We paid the house off. So the house is, we were very fortunate to where that we received an inheritance, and one of the things that we wanted to do was just to pay our house off.
Good.
So we wanted to save money in order to take advantage of the time that we had left to save money so that we were in a good position. Where we are a little bit different is that my husband retired as a servant, civil servant, firefighter.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have that stream of money coming in, which is a, you know, he had to retire early and was able to cut a deal where he gets a pension.
So let's
and
say
so we both also, yeah.
It's 3 years out right now. You're 2.5 years. You're retired. What's your retirement income look like?
So we'll probably have about with the both of us retiring and getting a pension from the, where we are now, it'll be probably about 775 $7,500, okay. $8,000 a month. So we'll be in a pretty good place.
Great. And what?
It's just that what assets other, we don't. Yeah.
What other assets are there other than your home? Do you have money in a 401k or a 457
the
or
bank?
Some IRAs
yes.
or in the bank? So tell us
yes.
about those.
So we have. All right. So we've got an annuity. We had this chunk of change, $300,000, and we didn't just want it to sit in a savings account. We're kind of chickens. We're not very. Mm-hmm. We're not good at with the stock market and didn't want mm-hmm. to take any chances. So we got an annuity, what we call an annuity, 10 years. We're 4 years into it for this $300,000 to where is that whatever we earn through the stock markets conservatively, obviously at the end of that 10 years, we would walk away with whatever's over the $300,000. Right now is $347,000
okay.
where we're at. And then now we also
did you buy that at your bank?
We had a banker friend, yes,
okay. Okay.
who suggested, who we were trying to get some advice on what to do.
Okay. Don't
with
take
his
any
money.
More advice from him. Seriously, don't take any more advice.
Here's
from
the
him.
Challenge. You know
I
what?
Know.
Here's, you said you had 300,000. Well, what else you have? Keep going.
Tell us what else you have.
So $300,000. We also have $200,000 in savings, still saving from that. And then with the 401ks together, we have about $300,000.
So okay. what do you think you should do right now?
So I really, it's one of those things where I want to do what's right, but I want what I want. And so that's why I'm calling you.
Yeah.
But I really would like to not have any type of a mortgage whatsoever, but I also don't want to deplete any funds, you know, that's going to affect us in the long run.
What,
you
so
know, when it,
what's the hurry? Why are you in a hurry to buy this back in Wilmington, Delaware? Why won't you wait the 3 years until you
Well, actually, it's a year and a half. It's only so you're uh-huh. talking about June of 2019.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess the hurry, I think my husband, the age difference, you know, I mean, he's going to be going on 65. I'm going to be 55. So I think we're just wanting to get going.
I understand that, but
you can't even live it for another year and a half, right?
Why wouldn't you just wait until you sold your house in Colorado and move back to Wilmington?
Oh, yeah. Right. That's what we want to do, but because the house would be built, is not even we're
Got
talking
it.
Like next year before they start building it.
Got
so,
it.
Does
How
that
many,
make sense? So by that
yes.
time, yeah.
How many homes are they building in this development in Wilmington? Hundreds? 20? 50?
So they'll be building 500 homes.
Okay, so it's like a Sun City. They're going to put a little golf course in there and a clubhouse.
Yes.
And you're going to a swimming
exactly.
pool and you get to go to the crafts. Fairs and right.
So here's the
hayride, all that stuff.
The most. So here's your challenge right now. Right, you're thinking I don't know what my options are going to be in 2 years.
That's what you're
right
asking
now,
yourself.
Right, you're like right now.
Right.
I have a clear path. If we made some,
yes.
if we put a deposit down, come up with some financing, we could pick the ideal house we want. We know that in 2 years' time, that house will be built, and we can move into it. Right?
Yes.
The challenge.
Yes.
So you certainly could do that. You could say, I'm going to take $150,000 out of savings, put it down as a down payment, finance mm-hmm. the rest, and say, yeah, we're going to take our chances with the belief that the housing market will be strong in the next 2 years when we go to sell our place in Colorado. You can
mm-hmm.
certainly do that. The risk you take is not going to derail your retirement.
That's correct. You'll be fine either way.
Yes. The risk you take, though, is that when you go to sell your house in Colorado, it just happens to be a soft
yes.
time in the market, and instead of getting 435, you get you
yes.
know, it sits on the it sits several months before it sells,
yes.
and you end up taking
yes.
less,
right? But the benefit you have
right.
is that you're not actually borrowing to buy a house; you'll be paying cash for it, so the interest rates
right.
don't drive it, right?
Right. Okay.
So
okay,
because you go back to Wilmington, Delaware, and if interest
rates
are,
if she bought it today, she would be
correct. But my point being is. If you wait the 2 years and interest rates are 6%, 5%, whatever,
matter.
It doesn't matter to you. And in fact, it would most likely push down housing prices with a higher
the
interest
most
rate.
Here's the most conservative option you can
what
do.
What did you do, Scott, when you built a home?
I sold and lived in a rental house for 6 months.
He sold.
That's what I was thinking.
And that's what you want to do.
And you know why?
Okay.
Here's why. In 1992, my wife and I were married. We bought our first house together in 1992. It was a lovely house on the corner. No, I'm just kidding. So we bought our first house. 3 years later, we upgraded to a bigger house. Our first house was very small, upgraded.
Relatively right. Small.
Okay, thank you. And it took, I mean, just remember, my own personal experience 25 years ago, it took months to sell that house. It was a soft market at the time. We had to offer some extra commissions to the selling agent to move it because there were so many homes on the market. And I'd lived that experience personally. So the next time I said, I don't want to live through that stress.
And you didn't want
it.
You didn't want to get stuck with owning two homes for a long period of time.
So it's a hot, what we know, it's a hot market right now. Mm-hmm. You could list your house on the high side, not in any rush to sell it. If you get a great offer, boom, you sell it. You go rent a place for the next 2 years. You buy the house in Wilmington
right now. You could do it one of two ways. One is you could sell your house right now and live in a rental and start the transaction on the Wilmington, Delaware home.
Two, you can do a contract with a Wilmington house now and use some of the savings and finance. Had you not had this money locked up in an annuity, you could have just bought it with cash.
Yes.
I know. Tell me about it.
So, or you could wait the 2 years, sell your house here and rent in Wilmington.
Oh.
Right?
Okay.
It doesn't have to be all or nothing.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right.
So those are your three options, right? Sell now, rent in Colorado, and then start contract in the Wilmington house.
Yes.
Right? The real two viable options, the ones with the least risk, or wait the 2 years till you retire, move to a rental in Wilmington, and then buy a house there.
Yeah, and then the cost of the house could go up, though.
That it could go down, though, so. Too.
Everything can go down.
Everything can. Yeah, how did he? Yeah, how did he come up with? How did that company come up with the price?
Well, it's because it's a community. Remember,
they made it up.
It's an old people's community.
They made the price up.
Old people.
They made.
You're 53.
Your old people's community. It's got oxygen plumbed.
You got plumbed oxygen. You
know, any room.
That's a relative term, but usually when someone's 53, they're not talking to themselves as an old person.
Old people.
All right,
mother time.
Even the 85-year-olds. Well, 85, that's like the new 65.
So the price can go down. Any asset price can go down or it can go up. What we're trying to do is to mitigate that price risk that if you're buying one and you're selling one at exactly the same time, and that requires you to live in a rental home. So whether you do it at the front of the deal or the back of the deal,
if you and your husband are both comfortable, that would be your least risk option.
Yes, that's how I would do it.
Okay.
I don't know if I'd move to Wilmington, though.
I can't see.
But listen, one last thing. The rent out here is so expensive that I just, you know what I mean? It's $1,500.
Well, then wait, sell the home in a year and a half. And then the problem is that it could be a year and a half. It could be 2 years. That house, your house could sit on the market for 6 months or a year.
No, shame on you.
Look. I know you're a new listener because we haven't been in Denver very long. But in 07, I said on the air that a 40% decline in the housing prices would not surprise me. I said it in 07. A 20% decline in housing prices right now would not surprise me. Mm-hmm.
Right now we don't see what the catalyst for that would be, but if we saw the catalyst, it would already be priced in.
Correct. So it wouldn't surprise me at all when you look at the bull market in all asset classes, but especially in residential, that a 20% decline
in particular markets in Colorado,
especially in
Colorado, missed out in the 2000s, didn't have the huge upswing, but they certainly have had the last number of years.
So the thing to mitigate the risk the least is to sell now.
Okay.
Rent. And I know you're going to pay a premium for rent, but you're taking that risk off the market. You're actually giving yourself some certainty to go back in contract with the builder in Wilmington. That's if you were my sister.
Okay.
And you're 53. You're actually the same age as my sister, and you just called yourself old, which is pretty depressing. That's what I would tell you.
Okay.
I don't know if my sister appreciated me giving her age out on the air, though, either.
Well, that's okay.
She doesn't look a day beyond 52.
All righty.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Tara.
Thank you very much.
All right. Appreciate it.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, it's everyone's Everyone's idea of retirement's different, right?
Yeah.
First person I've talked to said they're going to move to Delaware. I don't know if she spent a winter out
in Delaware.
It's a nice state.
She will now. It's a beautiful state.
Yeah. But oftentimes in
too many trees, though.
too many trees. What we look at is it's about certainty of outcome in retirement.
That's right.
How do we reduce our risk so that we have the greatest possibility of a successful retirement?
And that's
whatever that might look like for whoever.
We just gave it, and her argument was rent's too expensive. Well, that's a cost in order to assure certainty of outcome. You're going to pay over.
But you should have the capital to do something with during that time as well.
That is correct.
Anyway, we are coming up on a break. We got to take a short break here. When we come back, we will continue with calls. And if you want to be part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters, we'd love to take your call. It could be on anything. Maybe you're also planning on retiring soon and you want to get things set up properly. Or you've got something else going on, wondering if your 401k is allocated okay. 1-888-2-HANSON is the number. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, it's 1-888-242-6766. We'd love to take your call. You're listening to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. We'll be right back.
Wondering if you're on track with your financial matters? Call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean.
Thanks for sticking around with us. We're going to head right back to the calls. 1-888-2-HANSON. We're talking with Felicia in El Dorado Hills, California. Felicia, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
So my question is, my husband and I had a living trust created about 16 years ago. Nothing has changed as far as asset distribution, except we did purchase and move into a new home. I was wondering if it was necessary to redo the entire trust. I was hoping we could simply change the home address, maybe cross out the address, write in the new one, and then have that new information notarized or witnessed.
Well,
would this be legal?
It could be legal. It changed the address. Isn't a big deal. Here's the challenge. Today, each individual is allowed to pass along, either while living or at death, about $5.5 million before they're subject to any estate or gift taxes. So a married couple can pass along $11 million. The majority of Americans and the majority of Californians don't have $11 million in assets. So for the majority of, and for that matter, the majority don't have $5.5 million in assets. Years ago, and odds are when your trust was created, the estate tax limits were much lower.
They were like 600.
600,000. For a long time in California, it was, for across the nation, it was $600,000. Now, there are a lot of people in California, people of modest means that owned a home and a small retirement account, were above that. And in those days, in order to preserve both a husband and a wife, both spouses' exemption, a trust was required, for the most part, a trust was needed to put the to enable both those exemptions to exist by creating a secondary trust when the first spouse passed away. Sometimes called a bypass trust or a credit provisionary trust or a B trust. And a lot of older trusts were written stating that the secondary trust must be established.
Must.
Not maybe, or not to the discretion of the surviving spouse, but must be established.
So, we don't know what your trust said, so we can't answer the question. Now, I can tell you this. I have had clients, and I'm not a lawyer, I have had clients that had those trusts that said it must.
Yes.
And they've ignored them. They've just flat out ignored it. Funding the bypass trust. They've ignored them. They didn't follow the trust.
Okay. And then what happened?
Well, I wouldn't do that.
No one really knows because it hasn't been contested.
Oh.
Because who's going to contest it?
Who's going to contest it? The only one that has visibility.
Particularly if there's not kids from second marriages and all that.
Correct. So.
Here's what
that's not the right answer. I'm just telling you what they
In your shoes, I would have this trust reviewed. And what, unfortunately, when you go have it reviewed, it's probably from a different attorney, and they're going to, no attorney likes another attorney's work, right? Never.
Right.
It could be the perfect letter, perfect everything, and the one attorney says, no, this isn't any good because blah, blah, blah. So
what's your net worth? If you packed everything in a suitcase, how much would be there?
I'd say about $2 million.
Yeah, you need to go get a the
And how old are you?
What? please.
All right, never mind.
No, I can't tell you.
Okay,
fine.
So.
you might need to tell the attorney that. I'm just saying they might need to know your
name. And especially if you have children from a previous marriage, you absolutely need the trust to be redone.
Okay, we don't.
Okay.
We don't.
Okay. Yeah, I would spend the money to go get a new trust.
Okay, I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah, and I don't have a dog in the fight either. I'm not an attorney. I don't get paid by telling you to go get a trust done. In fact, if I thought there was a way you could go around it. In fact, I would tell, if you're an attorney out here, I apologize, but I tell younger people all the time, if you're not going to pay for a will or pay for a trust, which you probably should, at a minimum, go to LegalZoom and put some sort of a document together. Your estate is $2 million. You should go and have a qualified attorney redo your trust.
Okay.
16 years old.
Okay. Yep.
All righty.
Well, thank you very much.
Good luck.
For that answer.
All right.
All right. Thanks.
Glad you called. You know, Pat, I remember years ago, I had a client, had a previous trust, wasn't redone. We had to fund the bypass trust. Here's what ended up happening. This was a long time. So we're like, well, we need some assets to go into this bypass trust. And at the time, working with her, both her attorney and CPA, we decided the best course was to put the home, the residence, in this trust.
Okay.
This was before the law changed allowing you to exclude up to $500,000 from capital gains taxes.
Oh, yes.
Okay? So nobody knows the future, right? The trust wasn't updated. We're forced to fund this bypass. And remember, even at the time, I don't remember what the exemptions were, but it's like, man, if you had this trust updated in the previous year, we wouldn't have had these issues, but there wasn't. So we're stuck having the home. So now the home that she lives in, which is fine, that capital gain will one day be paid because the bypass trust does not receive a second step up in basis upon when she passes away. It already had a step up basis the first time. So it gets really complicated.
It does.
It gets messy.
It does.
Yeah. So.
And I wasn't advocating that I wasn't advocating earlier that if your trust said that you had to fund the thing that you should just ignore it. Just telling you what some of the clients, my clients have done.
Yeah. Anyway, let's 1-888-2-HANSON, 1-888-HANSON, and let's talk with Chris. Chris, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi, guys. You have a great show.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
So I have a question about life insurance. We have a mortgage of about 15 years left for payoff, and if one of us should die before payoff, it's unlikely that our single income could afford the monthly house payment and all the other bills and stuff. We don't have any other debt. So should we buy life insurance, or would it be better for us to save the cost of insurance and cash out the deceased retirement savings, taking all the penalties to make that monthly payment or the payoff?
Do you have children?
We don't.
Okay. How much is the outstanding mortgage?
It'll be about probably about $220,000.
And how old are you?
50.
Had you priced in what like a term insurance policy would cost?
No, we haven't looked at that at all.
How much are in the retirement plans?
We have about $1 million combined.
And how are they split?
It's about $500,000 apiece.
Okay, this is a great. This is and are you named as primary beneficiaries on each other's retirement plans?
We are, and we also have a trust set up.
And what other assets are outside of the retirement plans?
We just have bank savings. That's it. We don't have any debt at all.
Okay. Other than this $220,000.
So when you first called and asked about life insurance, I'm thinking, of course you need life insurance.
And then as you go through, I'm like,
man.
I don't know.
So here's the thing. Let's assume you passed away today, right?
All right.
Your surviving spouse can access your retirement plans without any penalty.
Just taxes.
Oh,
because
okay.
One of the exclusions, 59 and a half, or death is one. So if you die or become totally disabled, you can access without that penalty. So she could clearly access those dollars.
And pay and not have to take it all out as a single lump sum. She could just use those dollars, or you can use those dollars to make the mortgage payments out of those.
Okay.
All you have to do is keep it in the decedent's name and not move it into your own IRA.
Right.
So now in saying that, there's exposure, but it, you know, realistically, it's not a lot of exposure. Do you work where you are, you and your spouse are employed?
Yes.
Do they provide any term insurance programs that you could purchase?
Like one, two, your employer, like salary or
anything like that?
I don't know for sure. We work for the state of California, so I'm not.
I don't remember. Do you, Scott?
I don't know.
I've never investigated insurance. Okay.
If you had a couple young kids at home, it'd be, yes, you need insurance.
You don't need it.
But the situation you're in, here's the reality. When he passes away, the life of the surviving spouse is going to change.
Significantly, normally, especially the younger you are.
It's just going to be the future that was planned is gone. And now it's like, well, what the heck does my future look like? And it would take some time to kind of figure that out. But the reality is there's enough assets there such that the person would not be forced to move out of the house.
No, by any means. By any means.
Right. Okay.
I mean, if it was important.
But now in saying that, if they offered $200,000 term insurance to your employer, and the reason I'm asking this because it's through your employer, it's a lot easier than going out and purchasing on your own, and it's typically less expensive. Based on the mortality pool in which you're involved. I would look to see if they sold any through my employer for 10 or 12 bucks a month, and I'd sign up for that. And if they didn't, I wouldn't worry about it. Scott?
Or you can go and look at a first to die policy.
But they typically carry cash values.
I don't know. I would imagine there's some term first to die. I mean, in a perfect world, you get a first to die declining, 15-year declining term policy. That declines each year with the same amount your mortgage would be. That would be the ideal policy. Whether that exists or not, I don't know. Well, don't talk to an agent because an agent's going to sell you a more expensive
product. Go to SelectQuote or...
And then it's just kind of a personal preference.
QuoteSmith or whatever, and just...
Statistically, you're not going to die in the next 15 years.
Yeah.
Right. Odds are very low.
So I would...
But...
So it sounds like the advice is probably don't worry about it or...
You don't need it.
You don't need it.
So the question is, do you need it? No.
No,
you don't need it.
Now it's a want thing.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, you die tomorrow, and that was a bad advice we gave you.
But you won't be able to complain.
We won't hope for that.
You won't complain.
Yeah, don't hope for that. I got to prove those guys wrong.
If they sell through your employer, you can get a first to die. It's called a first to die term policy at a reasonable price and get $150,000.
Unless, if one of you had a significantly different income.
Do you?
A little bit. My wife makes about $30,000 more than I do a year.
Well, then maybe you need
get in on her.
Big policy on her.
Yeah.
Talk to financial advisors. They said, just get a big policy on you. And you have no children, is that right?
That's right. No children.
Yeah.
And we're maxing out everything.
Your wife passes away tomorrow.
What do you do?
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like to me that her remaining 401k and 457 should be enough to keep the house payment.
That is correct.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's correct. So you can admit it.
50 years old, right?
You could actually.
You
could buy it, but it's not going to.
From a financial standpoint, you're better off not buying it because odds of her, one of you dying in the 15 years is small.
That's correct.
Okay.
And becomes. And the liability becomes less and less every year. Yeah. So.
All right.
Appreciate the call.
Thanks for calling, Chris. Let's turn now and talk real advice. And this is a part of Hanson McLean's program where we talk to a financial advisor of Hanson McLean and hear something about how they navigated a client through a journey that they were going through. And keep in mind that the experience that this particular client had is not necessarily the experience that you would have, and it's in no way meant to be any sort of a client endorsement. So today we've got David Schauer on with us, and David Schauer is a certified financial planner. He's also a chartered retirement planning counselor, a chartered financial analyst. He has a master's in financial services, and he's the chief investment officer of Hanson McLain Advisors. David, welcome to Hanson McLain's Money Matters.
Good to be here.
Yeah, glad you are joining us today. So tell us about a situation that you walked a client through.
Sure. Two people literally in the last couple of weeks in very different situations, which was kind of great. So one was a younger professional in her 30s. The other was a retiree who was still, or I should say, the wife was retired. The husband's still working. He's over the age of 70, so he's receiving Social Security already. And for both of them, they did not qualify for a Roth IRA. Their income exceeded the limits.
And the limits are $170,000, somewhere in there?
For the married couple, yes, and for the single, quite a bit lower than that. And both were already maxing out their pre-tax deductions going into their 401ks, respectively, and they were looking for additional ways to save money. And we looked at what their employer matching was for in both cases, and the maximum between employee and employer contributions into a plan, depending upon age, is between $54,000 and $59,000 with catch-up provisions.
So the maximum sum I can contribute to 401k is what, $18,000 if they're under 50?
Pre-tax, yes. And then you have additional money that can go in via the employer. So let's say, for instance, the employer is going to match dollar for dollar what you put in. So if you put in $18,000, the employer puts in $18,000,
okay,
which is rare, but let's just say that that's
right.
the situation.
So there's
$36,000, exactly. And the maximum that the employer sponsor plan will allow for is $54,000 if you're under age 50. And so there's room there to put additional dollars in on an after-tax basis.
So there's retirement plan limits that are $54,000.
Yeah.
This has to do with KEO plans and solo K plans and also 401k plans, but only a certain amount is allowed for a tax deductible deferral.
Correct.
Okay.
Which is, if you're under 50, it's $18,000. If you're over 50 and above, it's $24,000. Including after-tax deposits?
$54,000 if
okay.
you're under age 50.
Uh-huh.
And so with this, we determined that there was a substantial amount of money that can be deferred each year, not on a pre-tax basis, but on an after-tax basis, about $20,000 for each of them. And the nuance to this is that you're allowed to roll over out of your retirement plan directly to a Roth your after-tax contributions. So in essence, this is a way for them to get money into a Roth IRA that exceeds the annual contribution limit because it's a rollover from the retirement plan to the Roth IRA, and they're staying within the maximum limits on their retirement plan.
And $54,000
and $58,900.
David, how many do all plans allow for this? Most plans? I know that
we had to check on that first. And so you have to, the first thing you have to do is check with your plan to see if their plan allows it.
So this is what we're really talking
so
about.
There's rules at the top, and then there's rules that the plans actually decide that they're going to use.
So first of all,
right.
This really applies to those that would like to save more in their 401k, number one. That's first thing. Number two, maybe they'd like to do a Roth, but they can't. But really, it's for those that would like to save more. So you can actually, if your plan, first thing to look for, does your plan allow for after-tax contributions? If you want to go beyond the limit, do they allow for that, right? That's the first thing, David.
Beyond the deductible
yep.
limit.
Yeah. What's the second?
Right. Well, the second would be do they allow for in-service rollover of the after-tax dollars?
So that you can move them into a Roth?
The goal is to get the money into the Roth as quickly as possible. I would probably recommend annually or something along those lines because obviously the money that grows from those after-tax dollars in the Roth is completely tax-free.
As opposed to the 401k, which would be taxable, the growth would be. If
correct.
It's left there. Yes.
Got it. So some of the plans, though, you have to check with your plan because some of them have testing for highly compensated employees, correct?
Yes. These are both large employers where
hardly anyone's taking
that was not an,
yeah.
It was not, meaning the testing is there, but the issue at hand was not going to be one that prevented them from doing this.
So if someone is listening to our show and they have a small company with 20 employees and they want to do this, they would have to check with their plan administrator because there's some discrimination testing, what they call
top-heavy. They may be
plans,
limited. Right? Instead of doing 20,000, maybe they're limited to none. Maybe they're limited to $5,000 or $10,000.
Yes. Got it.
Wow.
And that worked. That's good. That's good planning.
Yep.
That's
for
good
both
planning.
Of them in very different situations. One was 30, one was 70.
70.
Yeah, literally.
70-year-old working that wanted to save more for retirement.
And remember, there's no required minimum.
Is that what you just said?
Correct. And there's no required minimum distribution.
There's no required minimum distribution from a Roth.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, it is truly, David, we appreciate the call. And
yeah, my pleasure.
Thanks for taking the time here at Hanson McLean. But so, you know, it's interesting, Pat. This is one of these loopholes. And we talk about tax law complexity, right?
Yeah.
This is all.
It's
401, the 401k is a code in the Internal Revenue
That's
code.
Where it came from. As is 457, as is 403b.
Lots of different things. So there's this loophole in here that says, basically, if you make too much above some arbitrary limits that Congress put in place for a married couple, it's roughly $175,000, give or take. A single, I think it's $120,000, give or take. They're precluded from making Roth contributions.
Correct. So you can do it two ways, kind of get money into Roth. You can put a non-deductible IRA contribution.
Assuming you don't have any other IRAs.
It's a little bit more complicated than it is using the 401k. And then you can convert it to a Roth IRA. Or you could put in non-deductible and then convert it to a Roth IRA every year.
But this strategy is
the easiest to implement.
It's fantastic. But you're highly or maybe you're approaching retirement and you have quite a bit of savings sitting somewhere. How would you like to be able to funnel $20,000 a year into a Roth?
Yeah, all you would have to do is increase your contributions into your 401k and live off your savings. It is a very difficult concept for people to do, though.
Yes.
Because in their mind, they have to fix it that it's okay.
Fix that what's okay?
That it's okay to spend down money because it's ending up in a
unless
pot.
Somebody is already living below their means today.
Yes.
Yeah. So, but for most smaller companies, it doesn't...
It doesn't work. For large company employees, it works marvelously.
1-888-2-HANSEN to be part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters. We're talking with Robert. Robert, you're with Hanson McLean.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for joining us, Robert.
Thank you. I'm considering selling my primary residence to move to a slightly different part of town, maybe a little bit better neighborhood. So my situation is 50 years old, have $300,000 in a 401k, no debts other than a mortgage, which I currently owe $230,000 on. I purchased the house for $275,000 25 months ago, and my realtor says we can sell it now for $385,000 or more. So what's your advice, sell or stay in the house?
Do you want it?
When did you buy it? How long ago?
Said a year and a half. Did you say
25 months? Yeah, 25 months ago.
Okay, so it's been your primary residence two of the last 5 years.
And what's your income? Right.
$115,000 per year.
And so, are you married?
Yes.
What's your question for us?
Should he stay or should he go?
So the question: should I sell the house
and go where?
You know, and maybe rent for a couple year or two.
Or just stay
in the house.
Got it.
Yeah. So here's the challenge, right? If we had a crystal ball that would tell us when home prices are going to decline, there's no question that great advice would be sell the house right before the decline, rent during the decline, repurchase at the bottom of the decline. Unfortunately, we don't have a crystal ball, nor does anybody else.
And it's your primary residence. So what you should be thinking is, do you like living there? Do you like the house? Do you like the neighborhood?
We need to expand. It's getting a little bit small for the size of the family. So, I mean, we can
make it work, but you know, we like to be a little more comfortable.
All right, well, that's a completely different question. So if you can, you probably, it looks like you can afford a more expensive home.
The downside, the danger, if you sell and rent somewhere, let's say you sell and you rent slightly, a home that, you, as you say, better fits your needs, and you're renting, what happens if home prices continue to climb the next 5 years?
Then you're priced out of the market. So we don't recommend that you take a strategy of renting. But if you want to buy a bigger home, a more expensive home, you probably can afford it based upon the numbers that you've shared with us already. If you did that, I'd get a 15-year mortgage on it, you would add more to what you owe. If you and your, does your wife work outside of the home?
No,
she doesn't.
How old are the kids?
I'm the sole breadwinner.
How old are the kids?
Kids are 5 and 8.
How big is the house you're in now?
1,800 square feet.
Yeah, you'd have to do, you could probably afford it.
I would probably do a 30-year mortgage.
Would you?
Just thinking, you think it's expensive now.
I mean, yeah, but you could afford a more expensive home if you so desired, and get a 30-year mortgage.
It's probably not, if you do that, just figure you're probably going to work a couple more years.
That's right. That is right.
Which might not, it might be the right decision still.
Yeah.
I mean, you've done good to get, you know, a few hundred thousand saved for retirement. But
don't sell and move to a rental. If you want to do that, you can actually buy some put options on some traded REITs that will achieve the same effect.
That's right. Without
I'm not recommending that you buy put options on traded REITs, but it would.
Residential REITs.
Yeah, but it would have the same effect.
Or without, some home builders, you can do the same
you
thing.
You can do the put options on home builders. So there's lots of ways you can play the residential real estate market without actually moving your family.
Yeah.
And actually, oftentimes the guy actually recommends it, and then when they bring the idea to the wife, because I've had a couple of people say they were going to do this, they're like, okay, what we're going to do, honey, is move into a rental house for 3 years. And then the conversation ends.
Well, that is, when you're talking about...
It's your family.
Right. It's not just a passive investment. You live there.
Yeah, live there. That's why I said when it is introduced to the spouse, oftentimes the conversation is over.
Got it. Appreciate the call, Robert. Well, that's about all the time we have for this week's Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Glad you are with us. Hey, I'm just going to put a plug. If you're nearing retirement and, some of the concepts we talk about in this program, these are the kind of things our advisors talk about with the
There's individual. No downside in it.
No. We're easy people.
Yeah. Seriously. We'll sit down. We'll give you some advice. And if it makes sense for you to work with us, we'll tell you why. And if it doesn't make sense for you to work with us, we'll tell you that too.
And if you don't want to, that's fine as well. Continue to listen to our program. We're here every week at the same station. You can also get a podcast of it. And go to HansonMcLean.com for our learning library to get more information as well. We're out of time. We'll see you next week. This has been Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, a registered investment advisory firm. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor, tax consultant, or estate planning attorney to conduct your own due diligence.